Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Look at all I've got. Like to make a blind man see. Everything you wish you had. But God gave it all.
Ho, ho, and Merry Christmas to all our listeners here at Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. I am the Santa Claus, Ross McLeod, of this show, although I do work more than one day a year, unlike some of the people on the shows. Another beloved Christmas tale with my little helper, Gary Kernahan. Gary, how are you?
I'm good, Ross. I'm delighted to be your elf or your Mrs. Claus for today, bringing the listeners of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet another Christmas present. The type of Christmas presents you get from your mother-in-law, the type of presents you never actually asked for, but everybody loved the Viscera special when it came, and they're going to love this special.
I know. Look, you said you wouldn't use those slippers, and you did, so shut up, you're getting another pair. That's the kind of what this is. It's another beloved Christmas special. Gather round, children, as this time we talk about Mr. Ass, Billy Gunn, Daddy Ass, one third of the current trio's champions in AEW. Someone I have loved unironically, despite the fact that people think it should be ironic, throughout my time here. We've talked at length about him and Viscera being possibly some of the worst King of the Rings in history. And yet, at this point in his career, he's part of the most overact in history, in AEW history at the moment, I should say. So we'll talk about his post-King of the Ring run, his forties back and forward between WWE in the later 2000s and early 2010s, and of course now being part of AEW and being a champion there. But before we get started, just remember a massive back catalogue of previews, reviews, interviews and all the news. Xmas specials, centrals, Saturday Draft Lives, feature shows, so much more. Previews, reviews, interviews, and all the news. You can find it, Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, on iTunes, Spotify, and all good Android podcasting sites. And if you would like to tell us some of your favourite Billy Gunn memories, I know I'd like to tell you mine, then at Suplex, Retweet, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you name it, we're on it. So, Gary, I was going to obviously bring us from 1999 onwards, where Billy Gunn, as a wrestler, as a manager, as a trainer, as a backstage agent, he's worn a lot of hats. But let's go back to 1995, where the first hat was a cowboy hat. As one hat of the smoking gun, that's a segue, all right? I don't care what anyone says. One half of the smoking gun, Gary, you're a new generation child. What were your early memories of the man who would be Mr. Ass?
Oh, class! Well done, Mr. McLeod. And yeah, it was. 'Twas the night before Christmas, when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, and the hope that Billy Gunn would soon be there. And he was. He was. In 1993, he arrived. His cowboy hat, mullet, and moustache with Bart Gunn and their cap guns. And that was pretty sensational at the time. The Smoking Guns, who debuted in WWF after a long series of vignettes. I can never pronounce that word correct, Ross. How do you say it properly?
I say it kind of French, vignette.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's the way to do it. So they appeared, and when they would come into the rings with the long coats and so on, and it can't be easy to wrestle in denims either. They'd have these cap guns that they'd shoot off, and it was like, oh wow, because this was like pretty high production back in the early 90s. And they debuted with a bit of a splash in 1993. The tag division was not much to speak of then, but they were booked strongly from the start. They would become tag team champions in 1995. They would drop the belts to Yokozuna and Owen Hart, and this period of WWF was sort of full of random tag teams as well, but they would win them back. And in 1996, which is kind of like fond period for me in wrestling, because even though it wasn't great, but we got Sky TV in the house for the first time, so I was actually able to watch it much more freely. And actually, Billy Gunn had just returned from an injury in early 96, and the tag team scene in 1996 was essentially the Smoking Guns, the Godwins, the Body Donnas, Skip and Zip, Chris Candido and Tom Pritchard, managed by Sonny, and the tag team champions more often than not were Owen Hart and the British Bulldog. And it always annoyed me that Owen Hart and the Bulldog never got a tag team name. But the Sonny would sort of leave the Body Donnas and start to flirt with Billy Gunn. And it was there's no doubt about that. He dodged a bullet there. And what would, this is kind of like one of the first signs that you could see people, the company sort of rallying behind Billy Gunn, and the thought that actually he could be pushed on from this and become the breakaway single star of the team. And that's what would happen. He'd be flirting with Sonny, getting distracted from the matches. They'd eventually lose the titles, and that would lead to a split of the Smoking Guns. Sadly, we were subjected to the feud that nobody wanted of Bart versus Billy at the time. But that would be the sort of early days of the Smoking Guns, which would then lead us into the Rockabilly chapter of his career. Again, something that nobody thought of or wanted.
Yeah, we're going to skip by that. But just a couple of wee notes, obviously, on the Smoking Guns. They made their debut 4 days after I was born. May 17th, 1993, Bart Gunn and Billy Gunn defeated Tony Vaggia and Glenn Ruth, who would go on to be a hardcore and WWE tag team champion as Thrasher, as one half of the Headbangers. So there's a wee tidbit for you there. But we have done on the podcast before a rebooking of the 1999 King of the Ring pay-per-view, because regardless of your thoughts on Billy Gunn, and I've always thought he was a very good wrestler, it was not a well-booked pay-per-view. It was not a well-booked run. And this was a... We talk about the tag team division not being much to write home about in 1993, when the Guns debuted, but I mean, 1999, Vince Russo was doing his best here to break up every tag team and completely ruin everything. After winning the King of the Ring, you think, you know, let's put him into a big match. No, the next match of Billy Gunn's career after winning King of the Ring, the tournament that launched the careers of the likes of Owen Hart, Bret Hart, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Triple H, it would go on to launch the careers of the likes of Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. His next feud was when Billy Gunn in China lost to X-Pac and Road Dogg in a match for the DX rights, a match where X-Pac was wearing red, Road Dogg was wearing a Road Dogg shirt, and Billy Gunn and China were wearing DX merch. It made no sense whatsoever. There was about as much thought into the ring attire as there was to this feud. And thankfully, it only lasted one pay-per-view. And it led to another brief... Oh,
just before you move on, we can't go through King of the Ring that quickly, Ross, because we have to mention that in his run to win King of the Ring to become one of the worst ever King of the Rings ever, he beat in the qualifying for the King of the Ring on TV, he beat Viscera to qualify, and then obviously then on the night you would go and beat Ken Shamrock, Kane and X-Pac, and as you said, we'd have this sort of feud that wasn't up to much with the remaining members of DX beyond that. But yeah, I had to squeeze in a Viscera reference there.
For a reference, but see, that's why I skipped by it, just because the disrespect to the former King of the Rings, such as Ken Shamrock and Viscera, going out in the early rounds there, I mean, just when jobbers like Kane and X-Pac are given semi and final matches, I think not, no. Just for Ken. And by the way, we're talking here, we're doing this Billy Gunn special because we thought it was quite funny how he's went from someone who was never considered a breakout star to do anything outside of DX. And now in 2023, he's the only one still wrestling. He looks in the best shape, you know, medically enhanced or not. And he's part of one of the most over groups in all of wrestling. And I thought it would be weird because we were doing that in 2023, but then you've got a company that's not WWE selling 80,000 tickets at Wembley. You've got CM Punk back in WWE. You've got TNA coming back, and recently Ken Shamrock himself has re-signed with WWE. So I think when this was planned, it was the weirdest thing of 2023. Now I don't think it makes top five, to be honest with you. a feud that lives in infamy for some and is the feud between Billy Gunn and The Rock at SummerSlam. This was a feud here. It was Billy Gunn was quite literally between The Rock and a hard place, because WWE had to stick or twist here. WWE had The Rock lose to Stone Cold three times. He then lost to Undertaker at King of the Ring. He wasn't in about the title picture at this time, but he was still insanely over. He was a solid second choice babyface behind Stone Cold Steve Austin at this time. And they had to basically decide, are we going to continue to push The Rock and start the rebuild that leads to The Rock being the top babyface when Stone Cold took a hiatus? Or are we going to back the King of the Ring winner, Billy Gunn? And listen, I know it's Billy's show. I know I'm a massive Rock mark, but I don't think anyone thinks WWE chose wrong at that time to go with The Rock beating Billy Gunn here.
No, they clearly didn't choose wrong. But surely there would have been a route to achieve that without damaging Billy Gunn. And this feud did Billy Gunn absolutely no favours. One of the reasons, there were a couple, something you said a minute ago, Ross, I'm not sure I quite agree with it. There were a couple of times that WWE tried to push Billy Gunn as a singles star and then realised it's not working, and then they would try again later. I think after DXL, you know, the reason he won King of the Ring is they thought there was potential there, but he didn't have the mic skills. And then you put him against one of the greatest talkers in the history of the business. That's not doing him any favours. There's the promo where The Rock singing to the Billy Gunn theme tune calls him, "I'm an asshole." sticks in, it's hard to get him off it. And then this Kiss My Ass match where Billy Gunn brings out under a blanket what JR refers to in commentary in that match is a large woman. And he loses the match essentially because he brings this woman into the ring with the idea he was going to shove The Rock's face into her ass. And it gets turned around and it's his face that goes in it. And then JR says in commentary, Billy Gunn face, just be stuck in that large woman's ass, and Jay and the King comments to say, "I don't think it was the people's elbow that beat Billy Gunn tonight." It was just a lose-lose situation for Billy Gunn. And after this, he ends up going back into the New Age Outlaws and eventually back into DX. So it was a quickly abandoned singles push for our man. And also, yeah. I also wonder, when he became Badass Billy Gunn, why was it Bad with two Ds?
Maybe just so they could trademark it, I don't know. It's like when people do things with a Z instead of an S, it's just a trademark, and to make them look cool with the kids. One of the things, there was an interview with Chris Van Vliet where Billy Gunn discusses the infamous promo, the on Sunday Night Heat, the Bob. "My name's Billy. It doesn't matter what your name is."
Yeah.
He thought that many people thought, Chris Van Vliet said, many people thought that was you being buried. How do you react to it? And he just went, "No, I'm still friends with The Rock. I knew what The Rock's shtick was. It was going out and making fun of the heel. Or if he was a heel, he'd make fun of the babyface. He talked trash. We had a match." He goes, "I don't think that's the reason my singles run didn't work out." And while it might not have been why the singles run didn't work out, as you mentioned, putting him up against someone who's a much bigger star and much better on the mic kind of exposed him pretty much early on in this run. A couple of failed runs at the IC title, which would be a theme for the badass era of Billy Gunn. However, he does, in September 1989, as you mentioned, reunite with the Outlaws, who reunite with X-Pac and Triple H to form a much more heel version of D-Generation X, going up against the McMahon-Helmsley faction. Sorry, the McMahon-Helmsley faction. The McMahon family, Jesus Christ, there's so many interluding storylines.
That's easy for you to say.
I know, apparently so.
There's too much eggnog being drank on this show.
I know, the jingle bell rockabilly needs to stop, okay? So they go up as heels against the McMahon family in an era that sees Vince McMahon become WWE champion. The Outlaws win the tag titles back from The Rock and Sock. They win the tag titles again from Mankind and Al Snow. They hold these titles until February of 2001, where they lose them to the Dudley Boys. And this was when we were sort of seeing the fizzling out of the first sort of era of DX, because they joined the McMahon-Helmsley faction when Stephanie turned on Vince and joined Triple H. And D-Generation X, who were the rallying against the authority, had now came the authority. And, you know, we see it in 2015, we see it in 2000. Triple H and Stephanie at the helm and the people around them just kind of suffer because of it, due to maybe a bit of overexposure. And this sort of scene, that a sad fizzling out of DX, as I mentioned, Billy Gunn being kicked out of DX for, quote-unquote, losing his cool in February of 2000. That was to explain a torn rotator cuff. And he would be out until October of that year. He missed the big majority of the Rock going up against the McMahon-Helmsley regime. And by the time he came back, it was a much different landscape. What were your thoughts watching at the time Billy Gunn disappearing? Were you sad to see him go, or were you just kind of waiting for a McMahon-Helmsley version of DX to end?
Yeah, I mean, the McMahon-Helmsley era, as far as I was concerned, is not a high point in WWE history. I didn't enjoy watching a lot of it at the time. So I don't recall being totally gutted that he'd gone away for a little while. I was always a big fan of Billy Gunn's, and I thought he had potential, massive potential. So I was quite disappointed when he didn't sort of become the breakaway star. But when he returned He went into this, he returns to support China to compete against the Right to Censor, who I think, to be fair to them, were effective at what they'd done, but I don't think it was a gimmick that people enjoyed by any stretch of the imagination. I was also a big fan of Stevie Richards, so I was a bit gutted he never got a chance to show what he could really do in WWE. But they then fought over the rights to the Mr. Ass name, which he would lose to the Right to Censor. They wanted to get rid of the Mr. Ass and feel it was PG, and he becomes the One Billy Gunn. And I think I think his timing is incredibly unfortunate here, Ross, because he comes back at a time where there's a lot going on. We're about to get the purchase of WCW and an huge influx of talent. And he kind of just gets lost in the shuffle here a little bit. And ironically, the thing that will help him get out of that shuffle is one of those stars that come over from WCW who also get lost in the shuffle at the time. But yeah, I think he gets a bit lost during the whole invasion angle. The only thing of note I can remember him doing is fighting on the invasion pay-per-view in a six-man match, which kind of thrown together with, is it Big Show and Testy teams with? Can't remember exactly.
He was called the Shoguns when was right there. Anyway, I mean, you mentioned the return, helping China, who was in that feud with Right to Censor at the time, which would lead to China winning the women's title at WrestleMania the next year. He does lose the Mr. Right's ass. Mr. Ass, Jesus Christ. Right, see next year. No eggnog, no hooch, no anything at the Christmas party, okay?
No pre-show pints. Do you want me to just pass me the notes and I'll host?
It's charming that you think I have notes. Anyway, he loses the rights to Mr. Ass on the Halloween episode of Monday Night Raw in 2000. However, that's not all he's got. I mean, you look at all he's got. Everything you wanted, God gave it all to him. He's the one. He's got it all, as the theme song said to a banging sax solo, as the One Billy Gunn is born. A sort of mini DX reunion at Survival Series against the Radicals, Road Dogg, China, Billy Gunn, and another guy who is still as over as ever in 2023. K-Quick, R-Truth, part of that as well. And this time, Billy Gunn finally won the IC title. He defeated Eddie Guerrero in a November episode of SmackDown. 2 weeks later, over at Armageddon, he loses the title to Chris Benoit. He gets to the final four of the Royal Rumble alongside The Rock, Kane, and Stone Cold Steve Austin. I think we can all agree, Billy Gunn, clearly one of the top four people in that final four.
Yeah, one of them does not look quite right.
One of these things just doesn't belong here. And he had a short hardcore title run, winning the title at No Way Out before being pinned backstage by Raven on the same night. But as you mentioned, the Alliance, his timing was so unfortunate because he comes back. The Rock has taken the mantle as the top babyface. At the time, Stone Cold's coming back. So there's now not a one and two. There is two number ones. There is now Undertaker's back. Kurt Angle is over as anything as a heel. Kane's there. Chris Jericho's there. Triple H is there. You've had the likes of Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit come over from WCW prior. And then the massive influx of talent, you know, people like Booker T, Rob Van Dam coming over in the Invasion. He does get thrown into a lot of makeshift teams. He was on the original Invasion pay-per-view in that six-man tag match you mentioned. The Shoguns did a lot of nothing. Billy Gunn was involved in a Battle Royal at Survivor Series, which he didn't win. And that was pretty much it until an episode of Sunday Night Heat in 2001. God, remember that? Billy Gunn loses a match to Chuck Palumbo, who had recently left the Alliance to join WWF. After the match, Gunn suggests that they form a tag team Plumbo agreed, and him and Billy created this team that maybe doesn't stand the test of time very well, sensitivity-wise. Billy and Chuck, and almost they're gay, but we're not saying they're gay sort of way. The way that in 1970s and 80s films, the gay person was meant to live with their friend. That's kind of the way this was put across. But from December 2001 to February 2002, Billy and Chuck rose up the tag team ranks and they defeat the makeshift team of Spike Dudley and Taz to win the WWF Tag Team Championships. After this, they had their personal stylist, Rico.
This is just like an acid trip, isn't it?
It really is. Oh no, it was after this. Oh God, there's so much in this. So for a while they had the ambiguous thing. They even got a big win at WrestleMania. Billy Gunn tends to have his biggest WrestleMania matches as a tag team partner. Three of the biggest teams of the Attitude Era, the APA, the Dudley Boys, and the Hardy Boys, they defeated them in a Four Corners elimination match at WrestleMania 18. They then defeat the makeshift team of Al Snow and Maven at Backlash before beginning a two-on-one feud against Rikishi at Judgment Day. Rikishi and Rico, despite Rico's best efforts, managed to win the tag team titles for Billy and Chuck. Billy and Gunn win the titles back 2 weeks later with the help of Rico, and they hold them for a month before, and again, this acid trip continues. They lost the titles to the team of Edge and Hulk Hogan on the July 4th episode of SmackDown, because nothing quite says America like Hulk Hogan and his Canadian partner. what an absolute... There's so much of the Attitude Era that I had to watch some videos and read his Wikipedia page before this, because it was so weird. The Attitude Era, there's so much that happens that is so well remembered to this day, and then the stuff that happens, you're like, I forgot that happened. Oh my God.
It's amazing, Ross. Like the first 10 years of his WWE career, I was able to do my research and prep in a relatively short period of time. This period takes hours to do.
Oh, Jesus Christ. However, after losing the tag titles on July 4th, they kind of just hung about for a bit. On September 5th, the September 5th edition of SmackDown, Billy loses a match to the recently debuted Rey Mysterio. After the match, Chuck proposed to Billy, asking him to be his partner for life, and gave him a wedding ring. Billy agreed, and 1 week later, on the September 12th episode of SmackDown, Billy and Chuck had their on-screen wedding ceremony. However, just before they were about to tie the knot, it was revealed the entire ordeal was a publicity stunt, and they disavowed their on-screen homosexuality, admitting they were just friends. However, this would be quickly forgot because, Jesus Christ, this is a fever dream. The preacher revealed himself to be General of Raw, Eric Bischoff.
I love this segment, Ross. This was... The Eric Bischoff part of this segment is unbelievably good. If anybody listening to this that has not seen it, go and watch it. It is a masterclass performance from Bischoff. I heard him at the Inside the Ropes live show recently tell the story again, and it is just a sensational performance from Bischoff. Obviously, this angle and they'll not follow through with the wedding, and the way that Billy and Chuck say, you know, we're not gay, not that there's anything wrong with that, nod to Seinfeld, got WWE an awful lot of bad publicity at the time. Some of the LGBT groups and organisations in the United States spoke out about it, how actually if they had gone through with this and they had actually been an openly gay tag team, actually that would have been an incredibly positive thing to do. But the way they handled it was not. But the Bischoff performance, my goodness, was brilliant. At the time, he obviously had he had the heavies of the 3-minute warning, but Bischoff says WWE, months before this, sent him off to see a makeup artist, visual effects, special effects person in Los Angeles, and he got fitted for this face mask. And then a couple of months passed, didn't hear anything for it, and then gets told. So he turns up at that they were going to do this. So he turns up at SmackDown with the regalia on and spends the day in costume with people not knowing that, generally not knowing that was him doing it. And he does a fabulous performance, and then as it starts to fall apart, when, because wrestling weddings never go to plan anyway. The only difference with this one, there was no cake in the ring. So they start arguing. They say they're not going to get married. They're not gay. And the minister's freaking out at this point, saying, "This isn't on. Your love is sacred. Doesn't matter for how long it is, 15 years, 10 years, blah, blah, blah. And even 3 minutes. And then Bischoff says, "Did I just say 3 minutes? And he rips the mask off. And everybody's shocked in the arena. The pop is sensational. And then Jamal and Rosie, 3 minute warning, appear and beat people down. It's a fabulous performance from Bischoff. It's a moment that goes down in sort of history, but the follow-up from it's less than ideal for Billy and Chuck.
Yes, I'm just checking here just quickly. I think it was Harley Race. It was either Harley Race or Buddy Rogers. It was somebody a very high esteem and note. And this was around about the time Bischoff came in, and it was very clear he was working for WWE, but he still had resentment for them because of the WCW era. And he was like showing no respect to WWE legends. And I remember, see the 3 minute warning thing. I thought they were great. I thought they were great heavies. They were terrifying. Yeah. They were massive. The future Rosie and the future Umaga, absolutely sensational. And the fact that he would go into the ring and it'd be like Mae Young 1 week, and then next week it would be like Harley Race, and it's like, "You've got 3 minutes to get out of my ring," and the music would happen, and it'd be like, "Oh my," and JR and King on Raw were always amazing with that commentary, just like,
"Yeah,
no, don't you care, no, don't you," because King, as good as he was always as a heel, he always had that moral compass where it was like, no, this is beyond the pale, but we're not doing this. I always loved that. And the 3 minute warning come out to beat up Billy and Chuck. They're now managed by Rico, who was furious that Billy and Chuck weren't actually gay. And Unforgiven in a Raw versus SmackDown match at the start of that brand split era. 3 minute warning defeat Billy and Chuck quite handily. I remember that being the opening match of the show. Just checking just now. 3 minute warning, 6 minutes and 38 seconds. Aye, that was quite a weird show, this one. Sorry, I'm just looking at Rey Mysterio versus Chavo. You'll never ever see that in a WWF pay-per-view again, will you? The team that screams America, Kane, Goldust, Booker T, and Bubba Dudley, defeating the un-Americans of Lance Storm, Christian, William Regal, and Test. Jericho and Ric Flair get 6 minutes to wrestle over the IC title. Eddie Guerrero and Edge, Triple H versus Rob Van Dam. Trish Stratton defeats Molly Holly. Benoit versus Angle, and Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker ending in a double disqualification. Mm-hmm. What a time to be alive, eh? They're beaten there. Their final match occurs a few weeks later on October 3rd. The first round of the tag title tournament, one of the only actual teams in the tournament, and they're eliminated by Ron Simmons and Devon. Gunn then takes a few months off because of a shoulder injury, and Billy and Chuck just quietly go the way of the dodo, which is a wee bit upsetting considering they do still have an impact. You know, they are still remembered around about that time, and they were one of the few tag teams that stuck together in that time in the era of the brand split.
Yeah, it's unfortunate the way that this run comes to an end for him, because, you know, 1993 through to 2003, so 2004, so 21 years, so much in this run, so many highs, so many title victories, unprecedented success at this point with the tag titles, and it just sort of sadly fizzles out for him. Obviously, he started to see, particularly in the later period, a lot of injuries. But I felt that I think they were done. Him and Chuck were done hard. Were unlucky with the post Billy and Chuck booking, because that was building, started from nothing, built organically. Had this big payoff moment. Now we can, you know, debate the taste of some of it, but it's a different era, and it certainly doesn't stand the test of time. But I think they were really unlucky that there was no plan for them post the wedding.
Nah, I don't think so. I think that was a last gasp desperation attempt at some publicity with them, but. At the same time, you mentioned obviously the organisations that were outraged. They were very complimentary towards WWE when they thought, oh, they're breaking down stereotypes, and, you know, in an era where a lot of shows, like, you know, the likes of Sex and the City and all that had the gay best friend thing, they were getting praise here. And we talk about Vince McMahon not being able to get out of his own way sometimes. Surely common sense should have prevailed when they saw the outcry of support they got. Like, maybe the thing we're going out with here is it's not a very good thing to do, but they did it anyway. It lives in infamy. Injuries start to take the toll, as you mentioned. He returns in the summer of 2003. Reverting to the Mr. Ass gimmick, clearly he must have won it back in a lawsuit or something. He defeats A-Train and gets Tori Wilson as his manager.
I forgot all about this section, Ross. I've got it in my notes as well. I totally forgot about this. I just jumped straight to him getting his P45, sorry.
Oh, my God, by the way.
There was one good bit in this run. Such a random feud with Jamie Noble. When they have the indecent proposal match, if Noble won, he gets to have a night with Tori, and he did win.
He did win. Yeah, there was so many of these in this era. This the woman is the prize. There was the X-Pac Kane feud where X-Pac wins an evening with Tori. There was the Terry Invitational Tournament. I'll let you spell out those initials on your own.
Say that again so I can... Cherry, so C.
No, Terry. Terry Invitational Tournament.
C-I-O-Yeah. That's why I was like, who's Cherry? She was just in Domino.
Yes, the Cherry Lane Invitational Tournament will not say anything about. But you can... the penny just dropped there.
I didn't think you'd be that quick.
Oh, trust me, I feel like I'm that quick. Anyway, we had... God, this was prior to as well the Death Do Us Part match with X-Pac, with Kane, and Kane fights for a lot of women. Kane, yeah. Matt Hardy, where the winner would get to marry Lita. Lita apparently gets no say in the matter. But yeah, that was this was an odd era, you know, where women were used as prizes like they were on game shows. But yeah, Noble wins the match. Billy Gunn's injured again, so there's no follow-up. He returns in the 2004 Royal Rumble, eliminated by Goldberg, who gorilla press slams him, and I thought that was amazing, by the way. I thought
it was, but also, like, the guy's just come back from, was it another shoulder injury? Maybe not the best idea to throw him out that way, but yeah, you're quite right, it was pretty impressive.
He wrestled on Velocity, and for those of you that are too young to remember what that is, it's kind of like AEW Dark. He wrestled on Velocity for months, forming a tag team with Hardcore Holly. Apparently they did enough on Velocity, because at Judgment Day, Holly and Gunn teamed up against Charlie Haas and his former stylist Rico for the WWE Tag Team Championships, but were unsuccessful. In a singles match at the Great American Bash against Kenzo Suzuki, Jesus Christ, remember him?
Oh, God, yeah.
By the way,
SmackDown was dog meat at that time.
I see the new way Skype is now. It used to always say recording, like at the top of the screen. And I hit record. And at one point I noticed, because they don't do this anymore, it's not on top of the screen. And I panicked. Because if I'm talking about Kay Quick, Headbanger Mosh, and Charlie Haas and Rico, I want to make sure that this bloody thing's recording. Thankfully it was, but I get the absolute fright of my life. He was then released from his WWE contract on November 1st, 2004. In June 2005, he gave a heavily critical interview of WWE and the events that led to his release. Many negative comments directed towards Triple H, who Billy Gunn claimed runs the show up there. In other news, water is wet. a time in Billy Gunn's life where personal life-wise, he wasn't in the best place. He had a lot of drug and alcohol issues that would hinder his run in TNA, which we're going to talk about briefly. Gary, you've had many family holidays in Florida. I imagine you've seen about 800 Impact Wrestling matches with Billy Gunn.
Well, the great thing, the Impact Zone, you could get into the shows for free if you were at Universal Studios. So on a couple of occasions on holiday in Florida, made sure I went to TNA went to the theme park that day, rode the roller coasters, dragged my poor now wife Claire in to see TNA, and they would film like about 19 episodes of the show in one sitting. And they would do all sorts of things to try and get people to stay. Like, if you stay to the end, you get a free T-shirt. The wrestlers would come out and do meets and greets. And I remember we'd been in there for ages. And Claire's like, can we just fucking go? So we go to leave and we go to walk outside. And it is absolutely chucking it of rain. Like, a tropical storm was passing over. So, oh, well, I guess we need to go back inside and stay and get our free T-shirt, honey. But yes, I mean, one of the things about this run is obviously he comes in, he very quickly ends up in the tag team with his old stomping buddy, the Road Dog, again, and we end up with the Voodoo Kin Mafia. And there's a period of time, you even see it to this day with folk as well, where they keep having pot shots back, like the VKM. I just thought it was unnecessary, it's cheap and tacky. As I mentioned, he'd had a 21-year run with WWF, probably made an awful, awful lot of money, been supported through various injuries, clearly has his own demons going on, but you're not doing yourself any favours with some of this stuff.
That seems to be the go-to sort of promo when people leave is, I didn't get my opportunity there, but that's sports entertainment. I'm a wrestler. And the crowd will go, aye. Despite the fact that WWE is the biggest wrestling company in the world. And if you offer them a free ticket to WrestleMania, I don't think many of them would say no.
No, definitely not.
And of course, you would have, would you call it? You'll have the, I didn't get my opportunity, and then after about 3 months, you're probably like, yeah, I can see why. But as a reference to Vincent K. McMahon, Kip declared on TV that Triple Hollywood and Sean Kiss My Bottom were failing as the group They used to be part of DX. In fairness, 2006, DX wasn't great, but it looked like prime time compared to this going on in Impact Wrestling at the time. but yeah, it just, it kind of just, it fizzled out. It didn't really get started to fizzle out, but it's, they never won the TNA tag titles. They were never anything big there. Triple H, Billy Gunn goes on to be the megastar, similar to his one gimmick. He then gets attacked backstage by Matt Morgan multiple times. They then have a feud. He loses it. He then becomes the image consultant and a member of the Beautiful People.
Tell me you're scraping a barrel without telling me you're scraping a barrel.
He goes from being the... Jesus Christ. Him, Angelina Love and Velvet Sky lost to Rhino, ODB and Raka Khan in a bimbo brawl at Final Resolution in December of 2008. By the way, at the time of recording, Impact Wrestling had a Final Resolution last night, and I can assure you, without watching that yet and watching this, that one was much better. Bimbo brawl, but Zack Sabre Jr.'s on it, so, you know, make your call. He goes from being in a bimbo brawl match to being, the next month, the one-night-only replacement in the Main Event Mafia for Kevin Nash. How can you be in the Main Event Mafia if you've never been in the Main Event? He leaves Impact in December 29th of 2009, confirming his departure from the promotion on his Twitter page. Not a fond run, and we mentioned how we could sum up the first 10 years of his company with, you know, it was almost like a pamphlet, the first 5 minutes of this. This could have been a tweet, this run.
I know. Obviously, he goes on and does a run in the Independence following this for a couple of years. But yeah, it's a wild ride, isn't it? It really is a wild ride. Wild ride. I don't know what to say. I can't offer any analysis, any meaningful analysis of it.
They did, though, come back to WWE and kind of wash some of that stink off. They were best known as members of DX. They come back to WWE for Raw 1000. Yeah. Billy Gunn and Road Dogg make their first WWE appearances in nearly 8 years as they unite with X-Pac, Shawn Michaels and Triple H to reform DX. In December 2012, he was hired as a trainer for the NXT promotion. And I think that was a good thing for him. He got him back in the fold. A lot of people talk about how around about this time, Billy Gunn's personal life was getting clean, getting off alcohol and recreational drugs. And this was good. It got him clean and got someone who does have a lot to offer as a trainer in the developmental system, and someone who a lot of people from the early sections of NXT talk quite highly about.
Mm-hmm. This worked out really well for him. So not only is he, you know, he's back in the family, if you like. He's getting these odd appearances on Raw. He would come on to do Raw 1000, you mentioned, come on to do old school Raw in the future. And he gets this really good job training for NXT. I mean, there are worse places in the world to go and work, and there's worse jobs to do than being a fitness wrestling trainer in Orlando. it's a pretty good gig he's got here. And WWE would use him on Tough Enough in the coming period as well. So clearly there were skills and talents that they recognised there that this doesn't strike me as a sympathy job. This is a job that strikes me that he was rated at.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he has two matches in WWE in 2012. No, 2013, Jesus Christ. Easy for me to say. The return on the old school Raw to defeat Primo and Epico. The next week, they begin a short feud with the Road Scholars. However, due to Brock Lesnar's ongoing feud with Triple H, he battles both Outlaws during the match. However, he starts teaming with CM Punk. CM Punk and the Outlaws helped clear out the Shield who were trying to attack Roddy Piper on an old-school Raw on January 6, 2014. On the January 10th episode of SmackDown, the Outlaws and CM Punk go up against the Shield in a losing effort. The Outlaws teamed with Punk again on Raw, only to abandon him to join the Authority and become the Corporate Outlaws. During the Royal Rumble, Billy Gunn and Road Dogg get a tag team title run. They defeat Goldust, who's also in a sort of second wind hurrah run with the company. They defeat Cody Rhodes and Goldust to win the WWE Tag Team Championships. They retain the title the next night against Rhodes and Goldust. They then retained against Rhodes and Goldust again in a steel cage match before losing the tag titles to the Usos the night after they defeated them at the Elimination Chamber.
What happened to some of these people we're mentioning here, Ross? This CM Punk, this Cody Rhodes character, the Usos. What would happen to those guys?
Well, I don't know what happened to that CM Punk fella, but Billy Gunn does have the honour of being the last singles match that CM Punk had in WWE. Yeah. So, I mean, clearly CM Punk ran because he was scared to fight Billy Gunn again. That's clearly, I remember that being part of the Colt Cabana podcast. A short WWE tag title run that had four defences and a WrestleMania match as the New Age Outlaws team with fellow Authority member Kane to take on the Shield at WrestleMania 30. Billy Gunn was then removed from TV after he suffered a concussion during the match. He was off TV until January 15th when the Ascension, remember they had promised. Only to be attacked by DX, the NWO and the APA. The Outlaws then faced the Ascension in a losing effort at the Royal Rumble. He was part of the WrestleMania 31 match between Sting and Triple H. And as you mentioned, he then became a coach on the sixth season of Tough Enough. Unfortunately, he left the promotion under dubious circumstances on November 13, 2015. WWE announced that Billy Gunn was released from his WWE contract after failing a test for a performing enhancing drug. He was nine times above the accepted level of testosterone, which this was a powerlifting event where he failed the test, and WWE just said, yeah, if you're doing that, we can't have you here. He was suspended from powerlifting for 4 years and left the WWE at that time. Weirdly enough, and I mean, I don't want to say that it's all down to him. I know people talk about the Bullet Club, Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, but I mean, I started watching New Japan in 2016 again because Billy Gunn was there.
This is the sort of thing, there's so many, one of the reasons I love doing shows like this, and we did a profile show not too long ago with about Roddy Piper, the team have just done one on Rhea Ripley. One of the great things when you do these look back shows is there's things that you maybe forgot about, or you remember them different to how they actually happened, and it can be quite good for doing that and pulling some things out. And I did not know before, or I had totally forgot that Billy Gunn was part of New Japan. And we'll need to get our East meets West colleagues and our resident expert, David Campbell, to give us a proper rundown in their next monthly show.
I mean, Scott and Grant are claiming there's this thing called Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th and that they want to talk about that. I think we should get the real expert, David Campbell, to tell us all about when Tanahashi won Billy Gunn for the IWGP Intercontinental title. And no, I didn't read that off Wikipedia. I think fun things like that should be discussed, but who am I? Who am I but a man that loves Billy Gunn? His final appearances in WWE, the 25-year celebration of Raw, he appeared as part of the DX reunion. He was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2019 as member of DX. It was around about this time he had signed for AEW, where Triple H said, "I'm sure Vince will buy that pissant company soon."
Yeah. And obviously WWE, a deal had to be done to arrange for Billy Gunn to be able to appear at the Hall of Fame to receive his receive that recognition.
I think AEW at the time couldn't not let him be there. I think a bit of dirty play with from WWE because they knew he had signed with them. But I think AEW was in its infancy. I don't think they wanted to get involved in a pissing contest.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting Hall of Fame he goes in with. So he goes in with the Hart Foundation, Bret the Hitman Hart, Jim the Anvil Knight Hart, Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Yes, that Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Harlem Heat.
The Booty Man and the Ass Man in the one Hall of Fame.
Well, and the next two names I was going to mention both have points in his career. So the Honky Tonk Man, his former mentor, and Tori Wilson, his former love interest on SmackDown for a period.
The Billy Gunn Hall of Fame, who'd have thought it?
It's like the year that Hulk Hogan went in and he got all of his pals in. It's...
I don't know. I don't think his influence got quite as far as the Nasty Boys, but you know. Also, do you know what I love about that class? Is that not the year Bret Hart goes in as well?
Bret Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart, so it's just after the Anvil had died, and it's
when Hogan goes in is it 2005? Does Bret Hart not go in at the same time?
No, Bret was later.
Was it? Right? Not remember.
Bret was the headline of his class.
Because I remember Hulk being in the crowd, and there was the line, "Hulk was causing trouble as usual." And it just pans right in on Hulk Hogan. Everyone's like, oh! I wouldn't describe Hulk Hogan's class as being all of his pals. Iron Sheik had a 20-minute speech and he spent 19 minutes calling Hulk Hogan an arsehole.
That jabroni Hulk Hogan. I missed Iron Sheik on Twitter where you saw, fuck Hulk Hogan.
My favourite band's The Killers, and I just remember waking up one morning and it was about 10 years after the song Human had came out, and Iron Sheik was on Twitter, "Are we human or are we dancer? What the fuck that mean? At The Killers."
I love how the Iron Sheik tweets with his accent as well.
I know.
You can't read his tweets without thinking of that legendary voice.
Oh,
but yes, so an interesting class, and just you say, he's it now, part of AEW. And you know, Ross, if you were to have said to me at any point, like in 2023, we would be running around Wembley Stadium scissoring security guards celebrating a daddy ass victory, I would not have believed you. I would have tried to sell you some magic seeds.
Round about summer of 2002, because at the start of his AEW career, it is mostly he's part of Cody Rhodes' team. He's part of Rhodes' sort of inner circle. This was something we talked about, Cody Rhodes' AEW run being a bit over the top, because he had the Bullet Club, but then he had the Rhodes Brothers, but then he had his sort of inner circle of like Diamond Dallas Page, QT Marshall, Billy Gunn. He's involved in a lot of those feuds. He wrestles with his oldest son, Colton. I think Colton's the oldest.
I don't know.
Aye. Sorry, I'm just looking.
Oh, so you're talking, I thought you were talking about Cody Rhodes there.
I bloody lost the bloody thing I had for the gun club here.
Anyway, so he wrestles with the oldest son.
Hi, Jesus. Colton and Austin, that's their names. But he was teaming with his sons, then was sort of a manager at the time. And in the summer of 2022, Bowens and Max Caster of the Acclaimed started affectionately calling him Daddy Ass, because the Gun Club were getting called the Ass Boys by people. Yeah. And this sort of started a fun series of tweets where you would see the Guns and the Acclaimed in certain situations, and Billy Gunn would come to the Acclaimed's rescue while leaving the Guns to fend for themselves. So there's a Twitter video of him getting the Acclaimed ice cream while telling them to go get their own. There's a video of him passed out after a night out where he tucks the Acclaimed in and then just sticks the finger up at his boys and walks out and leaves them. So there's all that. And Colton Gunn was who he was teaming with, by the way. Colton, not Austin. However, the Gun Club had come to an end when his sons turned on him and joined Stokely Hathaway. But the Acclaimed would come to his aid, and the Gunn would officially start managing the duel. And on September 21st, 2022, at the Dynamite Grand Slam, the Acclaimed would win the AEW Tag Team Championships with Billy Gunn in their corner. And just a fun moment to see Billy Gunn as part of an over-as-anything duo, getting a sort of an Indian summer in his career.
Yeah, I mean, this is just super. And a super way to finish his career. I mean, he's just in totally phenomenal shape as well. So this just feels like, to me, like a really nice way to finish what has been. I know we've poked some fun and had a bit of a joke as we go through this, but to be more serious for a moment, he was a two-time WWF Hardcore Champion, one-time Intercontinental Champion, 11-time Tag Team Champion in WWE. He won the King of the Ring, inducted into the Hall of Fame. I remember the Raw Bowl that he won back in the mid-90s as well. And of course, current Trios Champion in AEW. This man's had a tremendous, tremendous career, and it's nice that he's getting this, as you said, this Indian summer to finish it on.
The Acclaimed would hold the title for 140 days before losing the tag titles to the Guns on an episode of Dynamite Championship Fight Night on February 8th of 2023. However, we didn't think we were going to get that Wembley match.
No, he was a tease, wasn't he? He was a massive tease.
He's teasing us with that ass. The House of Black defeated on an episode of Collision, the Gun and the Acclaimed, excuse me, retaining their AEW World Trios Championships. And it was after this that Billy Gunn took his boots off, and it looked like he was going to retire, only to return a few weeks later and say, "Wembley, us versus you, let's get it on." And maybe he used those words, I don't remember. But in front of 80,000 people, Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed won the AEW World Trios Championships from the House of Black in a House Rules No Hold Bars match. They're still the champions at this point in time. They're probably, along with Orange Cassidy, probably got the most defences of any championship holder in the history of AEW, because I remember there was a week where they defended the title about three times. So I'm glad that he's getting this Indian summer. I'm glad that he is, as we mentioned earlier with NXT and how people still speak so highly of him, he's been able to pass on to the likes of Max Caster and Anthony Bowens, like, information that they would never have access to anywhere else. You know, Bowens is only 32. Billy Gunn's been wrestling for 30 years. Max Caster is 34. So, two guys who were only infants when Billy Gunn's wrestling career began, and now they're sitting under that learning tree. So, brilliant to see so much passed on. And you know what? It's brilliant to see Billy Gunn getting that push, because we talked about how he works better in a tag team. And AEW, to their credit, is there's still a place for Billy Gunn, even at 60, in the wrestling world today, and they have capitalized on that absolutely beautifully while enhancing the acclaimed as opposed to Billy Gunn overshadowing them.
Yeah, correct. And it's you know, wrestling's full of these random things that should never have worked, but they did, and this is totally one of them. It's just been sensational.
Exactly. And one of the things that shouldn't have worked but has is this Xmas special that we are doing today, talking about the fall and rise of Billy Gunn from flop King of the Ring to 10-minute hardcore champion, personal demons, getting over that, NXT trainer, Hall of Famer, AEW coach, and now an AEW champion. Long may it continue, and hopefully Billy Gunn gets to ride this out as long as Billy Gunn wants to ride this out. We're going to wrap things up here on our Christmas special, but over the festive period, Central will be taking a bit of a break. You might have noticed not as much Central on the feed. That's because we have a massive massive amount of shows coming out that will be added to our back catalogue. Just recently, the Rhea Ripley special was launched with the debuting Matt Smith. Boo! The return of Scott McCloud. Who else was on the show? Scott, Sarah, Matt. Just my hatred for your best friend has really just overshadowed everything about it. Sorry.
Chris Murray wasn't on that show, though. No, check that one out. And of course, we're going to follow this up with our top 10 of 2023, Ross.
Our top 10 of 2023, yes. I'm just actually going to get a wee teaser for you, because that'll be the next show released after this one. And we'll be talking about this on Central, but I'll give you a wee preview here. We are going to be talking about our top 10 lists for the men and women of 2023. Would you like a wee preview of 15 to 11?
Yes, I would, Ross.
15 to 11, okay. Well, the men's 15 to 11. Brian Danielson at 15. CM Punk.
Somebody's going to get fined for that.
Mm-hmm. CM Punk at 14. I wonder if this was maybe a week later, he might have been a bit higher. 13, Dominic Mysterio.
Oh, 12, that's controversial.
I don't agree with that one personally, but I'll get into that later. 12, Damian Priest, and 11, John Moxley. So some big names missing out on the top 10 here. I'm looking at the top 10. There is no Billy Gunn, so I'm no longer doing that show. I simply refuse. Yeah. The women's 15 to 11, Tiffany Stratton, 15 to 11, I don't know how to pronounce this name. Gulia, G-U-I-L-I-A. I think she's in New Japan. Jade Cargill, Trinity, Chris Statlander, and Tiffany Stratton are the 15 to 11 on the women's list. So, a massive list has been compiled from all our contributors here on Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. Some differing opinions. David Campbell was telling me that some lists, everyone featured, but were like at number 10, so they didn't get enough lists to be on the top 10.
Yeah.
To be on the top 10.
It's like the Eurovision Song Contest, isn't it?
It is. Unfortunately, Billy Gunn received nil points and wasn't on the list. So, but
if that voting had happened after this show, maybe we'd have been a bit different.
I mean, you and I, we would have been accused of receiving bribes from the Billy Gunn Foundation. But the nation of Gary and Ross give Billy Gunn 10 out of 10, and we hope you'll give this episode of our Christmas special 10 out of 10. Don't forget our massive back catalogue of Central, Saturday Draft Live, feature shows, previews, reviews, interviews, and all the news. You can find Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet on iTunes, Spotify, and all good Android podcasting sites. And at Suplex Retweet, if you want to tell me what are some of your favourite Billy Gunn moments, what are some of your memories of Billy Gunn, how do you think this trio's run will end, let me know it all. Or if you just want to talk to me about Billy Gunn and how much you love the Ass Man theme song, I mean, I'm more than willing to listen. That's at Suplex Retweet, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, you name it. we are on it. Gary, thank you very much for joining me for our, was it 2 years ago we did the Visceral special, or was it 3 years ago?
I can't remember, because there was 1 year we missed the Christmas special because we decided to go to the pub instead of record the show. I think we did Viscera last year.
No, do you know what it was? 2020 was Viscera. 2021, you, me, Scott and Ryan went to a German beer house and get beers and burgers, which, I think was a great night. If we recorded that, you would have loved that. And Scott and Grant, as our resident East meets West and New Japan guys, recorded a great old can Christmas special last year. So this is, we're going to say it's the fourth annual, because technically we did have a Christmas night out instead of a recording. This is the fourth annual ESSR Christmas special. Happy Christmas, happy new year, happy holidays for anything else you celebrate. We'll speak to you again in the new year and hopefully be back next year with another Christmas special. We'll speak to you soon. Bye bye.
Hi, I'm Scott McLeod.
And I'm Grant McGrobby.
We are the hosts of the monthly show on Suplex Retreat East Meets West,
where we'll bring you all the latest happenings, reviews and big events from New Japan and the land of the Far East.
You can remember to check that out on the East Meets Suplex Retreat podcast feed on all good Android podcasting sites like Anchor, Spotify or iTunes now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.